Humans are the single biggest cause of climate change, according to a new report from the U.S. government. This is due in large part to the continued use of fossil fuels and increased deforestation. The report comes amid months of severe and unusual weather, including flooding, hurricanes, and wildfires throughout the United States and the world. And its release was approved by the White House, though it contradicts the Trump administration's stance on climate change. Catherine Hayhoe joins us now. She's a professor of atmospheric sciences at Texas Tech University and a lead author of this new government report on climate change. Catherine, thanks for joining us today on Central Time.
Thank you for having me.
Well, one takeaway, if you want the public to know one thing about this report, what are you hoping we learn from it?
Well, this report is hundreds of pages long, but it can be summarized in one sentence. Climate is changing, humans are responsible, the risks are real, and the window of time to fix this thing is closing fast.
And this is similar to past comparable reports and a lot of research. Is there anything that's new that maybe surprised you in your findings?
Well, the bottom line, that climate is changing, that we're responsible, and that we need to fix this thing, we've known that for decades. It's been over 50 years since scientists first felt confident enough about this to formally warn a U.S. president. But there is a lot of new things that we've also been learning. And many of the new things that we've been learning point to this being more serious even than we initially thought in terms of how quickly the oceans are warming, how fast the Arctic and the Antarctic are melting, how a changing climate is affecting our weather patterns. This thing is a big deal.
And part of what you do in your own research, I know, is to look not just at the big picture, but how a region might be affected, or a city, or even an airport might be affected by climate change. What kind of changes are we seeing on the ground at a more local level, and are we expecting to see?
Mm-hmm. Well, this is a big global problem, of course, but the reason why we care about it is because it affects the places where we live. And depending on where we live, we care about a changing climate because it takes the natural risks that we already face and it exacerbates them. So if we live in a place that is already prone to hurricanes, as cities are if they're along the Gulf Coast, we care about climate change because it's making our hurricanes stronger and it's bringing more rainfall associated with those hurricanes. But of course, if we live in Wisconsin, hurricanes are not what we worry about. We're concerned about heavy rainfall events because we've seen a huge increase, not just across the whole country, but especially in the Midwest. We care about summer heat. We care about pests and invasive species moving northward, not just land-based species, but ones that affect our water, too. We care about the risks that we're used to, that we've already faced in the past, but many of those risks are being exacerbated by a changing climate.
And part of putting out a report like this is that there's still a lot of opposition to the idea that the climate is changing. People say, well, there's still winter in some places. So really, is the climate warming up? What is your message for people who don't buy the whole concept?
Yes, we hear that a lot. Between November and April, probably the most frequent question is, it's cold outside. Where's global warming now? And of course, we're not talking about what's happening from one day to the next. That's weather. We're talking about what's happening over 20 to 30 years. And no matter where we look, we see that over climate timescales, the planet is definitely warming. It's kind of like as if you were on the Titanic and the Titanic was sinking. And you're like, well, it can't be sinking because my end just went 200 feet up in the air. You have to look at the big picture when you're seeing how things are changing. But when we actually start talking about this issue, we soon realize that our main problem is not the science, because the science that we use to study this thing, it's been around for decades, even centuries. Our problem, most of us, is with the perceived solutions. We feel that if we say, yes, this thing is real and we have to fix it, then the government's going to come in and set our thermostat, take away our truck, legislate what type of light bulbs we are or aren't allowed to put in our own homes, destroy the economy, and basically turn the entire country into a second world nation. Those are the perceived solutions. Of course, the truth is exactly the opposite, but who would want to live in a world like that? So often we find there's more positive momentum and we can really connect and agree more when we're talking about solutions that invest in the local economy, that grow the economy, that make the U.S. competitive, that build jobs, all kinds of things like that.
Talking to Catherine Hayhoe. She's an atmospheric scientist and a professor at Texas Tech University. She's a lead author on this newly released federal report on climate change. Catherine, I want to get into those solutions in just a minute, but kind of at the opposite end of the spectrum from people who say, no, there is no climate change, are people who maybe feel a sense of doom. Climate change is here. It's too late. There's nothing we can do about it.
Yes, and that can be just as harmful, because when we give up hope, we're paralyzed, you know? And the foundation of action is hope, the hope for a better future. It's true that some amount of the impacts are inevitable. It's as if we've been smoking a pack of cigarettes a day for years and even decades. But at the same time, when's the best time to stop smoking? Today. If we can't stop today, tomorrow. There is hope. We can avert the most serious and dangerous impacts if we act swiftly. And the good news is other countries are already acting. China leads the world in the most installed wind and solar energy of any country. They are shutting down coal-fired power plants now, not building one a day anymore. India has the cheapest prices for solar energy. They're setting records. Even where I live in Texas, last year we got 12% of our energy from wind. The first quarter of this year, we got 23% of our energy from wind. The world is changing. We've got Chinese wind companies coming into Wyoming, retraining U.S. coal miners who are out of work to do wind energy installations. The boulder's already rolling downhill. It just has to roll a little faster. And for that, we need all hands on board.
Let's talk more about that solution side. You were talking about local initiatives that can be economically productive, not sort of a let's go back to the dark ages sort of mentality. Can you talk more about what a local government, state governments, and private entrepreneurs, for that matter, are doing at the local level?
Mm-hmm. So this is straying very far, obviously, from the content of our climate science report, because when you look at the science, there's really not a lot of hope. There's just concern and even alarm when you look at what's happening to this planet. But when you look at the growth of the clean energy economy, there is a lot of hope there. Because if we installing wind, installing solar energy is a way to invest in local economies, there's far more people now employed in the solar industry than the coal industry today. The world is changing. It's changing in Africa. It's changing in India. It's changing in China. And it's even changing here to the point where we can have a hope for a better future by investing in clean energy and by gradually, not suddenly, but gradually weaning ourselves off old ways of getting energy that we've been using for hundreds of years. And amazingly, by doing this, it'll cut air pollution, which kills 200,000 people in the United States every year, just plain old dirty air pollution from burning fossil fuels. It grows local economies. It makes us energy independent, which increases national security. And it fixes climate change at the same time.
Let's get more into the science of the report and the findings. The report finds, it reconfirms that humans are driving the climate change we're seeing in the world now. Which of our behaviors, fossil fuels, I assume, are a biggie? That and what else is driving climate change?
Well, burning fossil fuels, coal, gas, and oil, is the primary reason for climate change. But when we break that down by sector, we see that part of the challenge of addressing this issue is it isn't just one thing. So agriculture is responsible for about a quarter of the problem. All of the energy we use in agriculture, as well as all the methane produced by cows and sheep, most of it out the front end, a little bit out the back. Transportation is responsible for about a quarter, our buildings and our infrastructure about a quarter, and then industry is responsible for about a quarter. So this issue is spread across all sectors of the economy, and that's why we really need these comprehensive solutions, like putting a price on carbon, like investing in the clean energy economy. That's why we need these solutions, because we can't just say, oh, well, we're going to fix coal-fired power plants, and then we'll be done. That is absolutely an important piece, but it's not sufficient.
In your report, did you look at tipping points where people talk about as things thaw and melt in northern latitudes, you'll see more methane release, things like that, are where we might hit a point where climate change really takes off and gets worse faster?
Yes, that was one of the most unique aspects of our report. We have an entire chapter, chapter 15, if anyone's interested. Chapter 15 talks about the possibility of surprise and how all of the signs are pointing to if a surprise happens, it's more likely than not to be an unpleasant surprise compared to a pleasant surprise. There are aspects of the climate system that we know if we look back through distant time, that if you push them too hard, they can flip us into a different state. There are massive amounts of methane trapped in the permafrost in the Arctic and even in the continental shelf that if it got warm enough to release could push us into conditions that have never been seen in the history of human civilization on this planet. We care about a changing climate because we have built our infrastructure, our cities, our economy, our agriculture, our water and food and energy systems. We have built them on the assumption of a stable climate. Two-thirds of the world's biggest cities are within just a few feet of sea level, and we are looking at least a few feet of sea level rise this century. That's why we care.
We're talking to Catherine Hayhoe right now. She's an atmospheric science and a professor at Texas Tech University, one of the authors of the latest federal government report on climate change. The report states that humans have had the biggest negative impact on the Earth's climate. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you have questions for our guest? What do you think of this news? What steps would you like to see people, business, government take to reduce the impact of climate change? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also email ideas@WPR.org. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We continue our conversation now about climate change and the human impact on rising temperatures on the planet. Catherine Hayhoe is with us. She's an atmospheric scientist and a professor in the Political Science Department at Texas Tech University. She was a lead author on a U.S. government report released last week that said, among other things, that humans have had the biggest negative impact on the Earth's climate. You can join in with your thoughts and questions at 800-642-1234. What do you think of the report? Do you think it'll make a difference in policy, in behavior? What questions do you have about climate change? What steps, if any, do you think we should be taking? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also leave a comment on the Ideas Network Facebook page. And Catherine, you were talking about surprises just a few moments ago. And I've seen, at least in some cases, to the extent that projections about climate change have been wrong, they've been wrong because things got worse faster than we expected. Is that something you've seen happening as you looked at this new report, as you put this together?
Yes. There's a common myth going around that, oh, those models are wrong. They're always going to say something's happening and it's never happened. But we can go back three decades looking at projections that models have made, and they are pretty much right on when it looks at tracking global temperature and how that's responding to the choices that we have made on how we get our energy. But when we start looking at the regional level and we start looking at specific aspects of our Earth system, like the Antarctic ice sheets, for example, there we see things changing faster than we thought. So if anything, there is substantial evidence that in certain parts of the world, the models are not right on. They are actually underestimating the rate of change. And that's why I said earlier, when we look at the science, there's not a lot of good news in the science.
Let's go to our callers now. Bill is on the line in Fitchburg. Bill, hi.
Hey there. Catherine, I want to thank you. I think you're explaining so well. Just really appreciate you. I was at the AGU conference. It's a American Geophysical Union gathering in 2007, and they talked about, well, I saw the graphs, and they were all exponential, which is, you know, faster than expected. 10 years later, you know, we're starting to see this. I think we have to do everything we can possibly do, and I agree with everything you've been saying, but being in the government, how much looking into geoengineering, you know, sulfur dioxide in the stratosphere.
Bill,
you know,
thanks for bringing that up, this concept of geoengineering. It's interventions, not just cutting climate change emissions, I guess, but changing the atmosphere on purpose. What kind of did you get into geoengineering in this report, first of all, Catherine?
Yes, we only mention it very slightly because this report was not intended to be about policy, but there is a Senate hearing coming up this week on geoengineering. So you are going to see on C-SPAN this week some of the top experts in the world talking about geoengineering. And I have this little PBS digital series on YouTube called Global Weirding. We have these short videos that address topics, and we have one on geoengineering coming up later this season also. Short answer, geoengineering is the idea of, for example, spraying soot into the atmosphere to mimic the effects of a volcano that temporarily cool the Earth, or altering the composition of the ocean so it soaks up more carbon dioxide than it would naturally. Geoengineering can also be extremely basic, like planting a ton of trees which would also soak up the carbon dioxide. So we can't say, you know, a blanket statement, oh, no, we should never do geoengineering. Absolutely not. I think we all support planting trees, right? But when you get into some of the more speculative stuff that we've never done before, then that worries me, because it's like giving every single person on the entire planet the same experimental drug without it ever having been lab tested. So that's why I support studies of geoengineering, because the worst possible thing could be some country unilaterally deciding to do it and us not actually understanding the full impacts. I think it needs a lot more study before we can view it as a viable thing to do, because even though it would temporarily cool temperature, it wouldn't actually affect problems like ocean acidification or changes in the hydrological and the water cycle. It wouldn't affect those. So we would still be dealing with impacts while we had this other thing going on over here.
Bill, thanks for that call. We'll go next to Kelly on the line in Cascade. Kelly, hi.
Hi. Thank you so much for covering this topic. I'm delighted. It gives me hope. I feel like this is probably one of the most pressing topics that needs to be covered for our generation and my children and their children. So thank you. My question is, if this is a federal report, who is being required to read it? I feel like our government officials across the board need to have access to this, and I'd love to see it be a required reading for all of them. So thank you.
Kelly, thanks for the call. Catherine, the audience for this report.
Well, I would love for it to be required reading, and I can't help but assuming that people might not have read it before approving it, given that it was released by the federal administration under 12 agencies. The answer, though, is this is available now for everybody to read. You can find it online at science2017.globalchange.gov, and it is there for everyone. I wish that we could make all of our leaders read it, but we can't. We live in a free world. But it is there for anyone who wants that information. And that is why I and so many of my colleagues spent our time writing this. We didn't get paid. This is something that I did nights, weekends, 3 a.m. often. We did it because we wanted our best available information to be out there. So anybody who has a question about the science will have access to the most up-to-date science in the world right now at their fingertips at science2017.globalchange.gov.
Thanks for that call, Kelly. We're talking to Catherine Hayhoe from Texas Tech. She's one of the lead authors on a newly released federal report on climate change, its causes, impacts, and possible solutions. Back to your calls now. We've got Simmer on the line in Milwaukee. Simmer, hi.
Hi, Rob, hi, Catherine. Thank you for keeping the show going. I just have a question regarding the Paris Climate Accord. We are the only country left that actually pulled out. And what's the impact? I guess, Catherine, you're doing a great job of explaining all of this, as one of the previous callers said. Is like, can you just explain to the masses what actually the Paris Accord was doing?
Simmer, thanks for that. And in the news, Syria just signed on with the last holdouts in Nicaragua. With one of the others has recently signed on. So that, I believe that leaves us as the only nation not in. Sorry to interrupt, Catherine. Go ahead.
Oh, no. Thank you for the update. I mean, isn't that ironic that the U.S. has the most up-to-date climate science report in the entire world, and it's the only country that isn't part of the negotiations that are going on in Bonn right now? So this in Bonn this week is the follow-up to the Paris Agreement. It's essentially like a weigh-in. You know when you're losing weight and you have like a weigh-in to see how good you're doing? That's what the meeting in Bonn is. It's a weigh-in on the Paris Agreement to see, here's what all the countries promised they would do. When they met in Paris 2 years ago, every country brought something to the table, kind of like a potluck dinner. One, you know, Bhutan said, we're going to reforest X amount of our country. France said, we're going to work on carbon sequestration in our soil. The United States said, we're going to offer the clean power plant. Everybody brought a different dish to the global potluck on how they were going to reduce their carbon emissions. And at the Paris meeting, every country in the world agreed to limit global temperature increase to at least 2 degrees Celsius, which is about 3.5 degrees Fahrenheit, and 1.5 degrees Celsius if we can. Currently, the pledges that have been made are enough to limit warming to 2.8 degrees Celsius. So we're not there yet. And that's why there's follow-on meetings, because we need a little bit more. The table is not full yet. We don't have everything on the table that we need to meet the agreement that people set. But here's the good news for the U.S. It's true that the U.S. is not in as a country, but there's this movement you might have heard of called We're Still In. It has been joined by cities, by businesses, by states, And soon it's going to be available for individual people to join. And so far, I think somewhere around 40% of U.S. emissions, people, businesses, cities, states responsible for 40% of U.S. emissions, give or take, they have already committed to meet their Paris Agreement targets. So just because the federal government isn't in doesn't mean that we can't be in, and many of us are.
Simmer, thanks for that call. And briefly, Catherine, as we wrap up, as you said at the outset, a lot of the science news is bad. You sound optimistic. Why?
I don't get my hope from looking at the science. I get my hope from looking at what people are doing. It is amazing how the clean energy economy is expanding and growing. In China, where they're flooding open pit coal mines and putting floating solar panels on the top. In Saudi Arabia, where they're talking about how they can turn their economy from fossil fuels to clean energy. And where I live in Texas, where they're putting up new wind turbines every time you turn around. The world is changing. And I get my hope from looking at what people are doing, including the fact that we have a bipartisan climate solutions caucus in Congress that supports putting a price on carbon. And it has 60 members, half of them Republican, half Democrat, because you're not allowed to join unless you join with somebody from the other party. So even in Washington, things are starting to change.
Catherine, thanks for joining us today.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me.
That's Catherine Hayhoe, atmospheric scientist and professor in the Political Science Department at Texas Tech University. She's the lead author on a new U.S. federal report on climate change.